And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 84 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby, here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. Mark, what's going on today?
I can't find my video feed. That's what I can't find. I'm supposed to be able to see your faces, and I clicked something, and like a boomer, now I can't find it.
Yeah, no, that's tough. That's tough. Anyways, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about this management, Mark. I was flipping you off the whole time.
Oh, hey, there I found you again. I found you again.
All right.
Let's... Oh, you were flipping me off the whole time?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Man, I was about to pay him a compliment too, Andy.
What's that? He wrote something short?
Yeah, I read something of his. It was like under 3,000 words. And I'm like, wow, this is easy breezy Grant Brisby, man. I love it.
I haven't written anything under 1,400 words since like '06.
Grant, as a wise man once said, that's not writing, that's typing.
It's not getting better. It's just getting longer.
Yeah, that's fair. I can understand that. Anyways, Andy, how are you?
You know, I got to have some conversations with my accountant this afternoon and, you know, rectify some irregularities. But other than that, I think I'll be all right. Maybe. Hey, I have a book coming out in May. It's about Clayton Kershaw. It's called The Last of His Kind. I'm really proud of it. And if you guys would pre-order it, maybe I will be able to get out from under these taxes that I neglected to pay.
Yeah, Andy's gone up the river. He's a scofflaw. He's a scofflaw, so buy his book.
I guess you can be put in prison for just being an idiot. So we're going to find out. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, this book's coming out May 7th. Really excited. So just want to get the plugs in. Please pre-order if you want to read it. I think you'll like it if you like baseball, and you'll really like it if you like the Dodgers.
Absolutely.
If you know the IRS, they're going to seize all of the royalties from this book. So that's good.
Yeah. Mark, you want to plug your book on the A's?
Shut up. You know what? I heard your bullshit last week on this too. Like, you get Britain on this nonsense. Who the hell are you dropping a Gilmesh reference in the middle of a podcast, by the way?
That's my brand. That's my brand. Toward the end of the episode, we will be dropping some news, some roundtable news. It's not bad necessarily. I don't know. It's in the eye of the beholder, depending on which one of your favorite roundtable heads or which one of your favorite roundtable hosts you connect with the most. Nobody's a market. All right. So we're talking NL West today. We're previewing the divisions, and we just picked the NL West last week. And then last night, Blake Snell signs with the Giants. So good timing. That never happens.
That's true. Yeah. With our luck, Blake Snell would have signed tonight. You know, that's how we've been doing it for the history of the pod. So, yeah.
100%. 100%. So every time we do this, we start, I think, with the NL West. And then I ask the question, like, well, do we start with the Rockies or end with the Rockies? Because it's, you know, do you want the bleak at the beginning or the bleak at the end? Or do we just,
we should start with the Rockies.
Does this count as talking about the Rockies?
Yes, we should start with the Rockies.
All right, the Rockies, hey, they do fascinate me. They do fascinate me. Honestly, because
why?
I've written a lot about them. I did a chapter in a baseball prospectus annual. Like, I'm fascinated with them because they have one of the toughest jobs in professional sports. Just like out of the gate, trying to figure out baseball at altitude when other teams don't have to, and you've got these lingering Coors hangovers, and it's like you're a nuclear physicist already trying to build a baseball team, but now you have to learn advanced French or something. Like it's on top of it's like a different discipline almost. And now you fold into this an ownership group that's like, oh, I don't think we need to pay analysts. Like, I don't think we really need to do much of the whole baseball studying thing. Let's just let her rip. And you've got the Rockies. And it's fascinating to me because it's like the fans keep coming out. It's like a good ballpark. It's has high engagement. People want to love the Rockies. They're fascinating to me.
I do feel bad about the last part of that. They're going to be top 10 in attendance or whatever again this year. All right. These people go and still have a good time despite being subjected to dudes with like a 5.5 ERA every single day. You know, I guess you could make an argument that they're being efficient because they had a bunch of 5.5 ERA guys with all the nerds in the house, and they got a bunch of 5.5 ERA guys with no nerds in the house. So it makes you wonder, just like, I used to think the altitude thing was like, so much of an excuse. And it's like, all right, this is a very easy thing to sort of like point to when things go sideways, but I don't know, man. It sure feels daunting, almost impossible, especially when you have four teams in your neighborhood, you know, that are either good or always striving to be, it seems like, or making moves to be. So I do feel for the fans for sure, but I'm kind of bored by it at this point, because it's the same old crap over and over and over again. Like, I mean, it's a conveyor belt of dudes with 5.5 ERAs. That's what it is. Like, it is every season. So it has gotten tired. That's the word in the sport. It's a bit tired. The Rockies are tired. That's it.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're short of breath. There's less air.
Good point.
I was having a conversation with an executive this spring, and I brought up the point that you guys both raised. That, like, I think the altitude is actually a bigger issue. We've been aware of the altitude for so long that we've forgotten how actually challenging it is. And I was talking to this guy, and I kind of just said that in passing, and he was like, yeah, you know what though? Like, there's no control group to determine how tough it actually is to work with altitude, because it's been the same people running the Rockies for so long, you know? Like, there's regime change. Like, they just sort of accelerate, you know. It's the same group. It's the same ownership. It's generally, you know, kind of people who have worked for the team for quite some time who tend to be in charge. So, like, there's no way to actually – whoa, there was a loud dog noise. There's no way to actually sort of, you know, test out how challenging it is. We've never seen, like, David Stearns or Andrew Friedman or Theo Epstein, you know, trying to run the Rockies. So, I don't know. I just – who cares? Let's move on. Like, let's put the same effort into them that they put into their offseason and just move
on. Whoa. Hey, what is that, like, the last frontier, right? Because the Cubs won a World Series. Like, Theo got the Cubs to win a World Series. Theo got the Red Sox to win a World Series. So what are the last frontiers in baseball? It's the Rockies, right?
The Rockies have never won the division.
Never won the division, right. So, like, does Theo just, like, decide to drop his ownership stake, get his hands dirty again in Denver one day?
No. And why would you do that when you could be the last frontier?
Well, that's a good point.
No, I'm just going to take my equity.
What? This guy's a pro-labor podcast. He's talking about equity and, like, skirting his taxes. Like, what the hell is going on around here?
I didn't do it on purpose. Good Lord. I really need my accountant to get back to me. Anyway, yeah, if Rocky's fifth place, who cares? I don't know. I don't want to take total control of this, but, like, I think pretty clearly we're all going to pick the Dodgers to win the division.
Act Blake Snell, baby.
I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. After reading this celebratory column this morning to prep for this hour of joy with you fellas, I knew this was coming, but go on.
No, yeah, it's Dodgers. It's Dodgers.
So maybe we can get to the Dodgers at the end. I do think, you know, it's interesting, Grant. I was looking at the Giants, you know, at their roster resource and, like, looking at all the moves they made and that, you know, they've upgraded in a lot of areas. I am somewhat concerned about the situation at backup third base. Do you think that there was anything they could have done to keep that position really, really strong in the past couple weeks.
Is this like JD Davis humor? Yeah, I just... But like,
well, I just felt like the team, it was like missing one thing and it was a backup third baseman.
That's what Wilmer Flores is for, baby.
Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
No, they're nails there. I don't mind going Giants because I still think that they could very well finish in fourth place. I don't have like official NL West rankings right now, but I think the Padres, Diamondbacks, and Giants are like this amorphous blob in the middle where anything can happen. Any of them can win 95. Any of them could lose 90. Let's put the floor higher than 95, maybe 85 or something like that.
Yeah. Wait, what? You think these teams could win 95 games?
Sure. Well, I mean, crap. The Giants won 107 a couple years ago. You remember that? Like, any team that gets to the 90-win threshold is a Pythagorean fart away from going to 95 wins, you know? Like,
a Pythagorean what?
I mean, Pythagorean that was fart. Not a Pythagorean fart. I mean, that was a Pythagorean bowel movement that has probably never been seen again.
Pythagorean chart.
You know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden, yes, this team is a true 88 win team, but they were 37-5 in one run games. And like when you get to that 90 win threshold, weird stuff can happen. That's what I mean by these teams can win 95 games. I don't mean
true. I don't know if any of these three teams are at the 90 win threshold.
Let's bring some data into this conversation. So I'm looking right now at the NL West preview running tomorrow on theathletic.com. Subscribe today. Austin Mock, who does really good projections on the fantasy side, did some for us in baseball this year. So to Grant's point about the three teams being a quote-unquote amorphous blob, Padres, Giants, Diamondbacks, all right? Expected wins for each. Ready? Giants, 82. Dads, 82. Snakes, 82. All right.
I love it.
Percentage chance to win the National League West. You ready? We'll start with the Snakes. 4%. Dads, 4.3%.
Whoa.
Giants, 4.9%.
Whoa. It's
dead on. You guys are both right. All right. It's an amorphous blob. There's a lot of like sameness, even with Snell in the mix for the Giants. But to Andy's point, man, it's hard to see them getting, you say 95 wins? Yeah, that takes a Pythagorean, like, GI crisis.
Oh, right. Man,
it's a lot, bro.
Dude, all right, so last year, if we're talking about the AL East, and I'm like, the Orioles could win 101 games. It's just as stupid. I'm just talking about, like, the upper edges of what is possible. The Orioles won 101 games. They're not 101
win team. The Giants
are
winning 95 games. That's what you want to say. Grant, I get it.
No, they're going to win, like, 85 games. Son of a...
You need to chill, man.
No, Grant.
Calmer than you are.
What if signing Blake Snell was only possible because they cut JD Davis?
I mean, I did write about that where it cutting JD Davis, I think I did the math and it saves them like $1 million+ as when you add in Blake Snell's contract. That's not nothing. It's not what got them over the edge, but they could throw a nice holiday party now.
Hey, whose agent had a better offseason? Blake Snell's or JD Davis's?
Yeah, Boris.
Woo! Woo!
Snell does not want, he's like, was this podcast where like we're talking about the people who don't want a pillow contract and Blake Snell was 1A, this guy should not want a pillow contract, this guy should want the 8 years and, you know, laugh to the bank when he's bad in 2 years?
Dude, that's crazy. Like that, the whole, even the term pillow contract's a whole different meaning now. Because now it's just smothered the players with these pillow contracts.
Well, there's also, I think with Snell too, like he was pretty open about how much trouble he had adjusting to San Diego after being so comfortable in Tampa Bay. And look, he's older and, you know, has been through the process before, so it won't be as jarring as like getting traded, you know, like after pitching an elimination game in the World Series. But there will be something of an adjustment, you know, even if he's same division and things like that. There's, you know, just learning a new catcher, all the sorts of little things. And so
new manager.
He does have the exact same manager. The game is still 9 innings, and he'll still exit after the 6th. So, like, that hasn't changed.
Wow, you're predicting 6?
I think he's really good. You know, and so there's less adjustments than there would be if he was taking, like, a 1-year deal with the Yankees or something like that, for sure. but he's also demonstrated that he tends to get better as he's more comfortable in a place. And so that's why, you know, the long-term commitment, not just because, you know, the basic aging curve for a pitcher is like, you want the, you know, the guaranteed money when you're going to be worse, but just hit the profile of his career, it seems to suggest that he would benefit from stability. But, you know, there wasn't a long-term offer that met his, you know, price point. And so he'll be probably back on the market next year.
Do you think that there were big-timey long-term deals in the beginning of the offseason, just not to his and Boris's liking?
The details of what the Yankees offered are kind of murky. I mean, but what's been reporters is it's somewhere in the 6 to 150 range. You know, the devil is in the details, right? Six at $25 million a year and six at $32 million a year. They kind of sound basically the same if you're like broke guys like us who are struggling with our taxes. But there's a pretty significant delta there in terms of your desired value. And so I think that there was probably an expectation that a lot of the teams who missed on Yamamoto would jump on Snell. And that just kind of didn't happen. It will be one thing if like the day after Yamamoto signed with the Dodgers, if the Giants like immediately offered Snell, you know, seven for 200 million or something like that, right? That was kind of what I think we kind of thought was going to happen. Maybe not the Giants, that, but you know,
100%.
That's kind of how off seasons have played out the last few years, right? And there just wasn't that feeding frenzy. And so you take, you know, Scott Boras's general tactic of like, you know, kind of going into four corners and not, you know, waiting until you get the offer that meets your value, and combined with the TV uncertainty and, you know, teams kind of like not being as willing to spend. And yeah, it's kind of where you're at.
The draft pick, you know, the luxury tax thing for a lot of the teams.
You can always talk yourself out of a free agent. It's always easier to say, no, we don't want to marry this guy, you know?
No, that's fair.
How about a world in which the reigning Cy Young Award winner doesn't sign until after St. Patrick's Day, and the dude who hasn't thrown a single pitch in the major leagues got $200 million? Right? If I had told you that a couple of years ago, I know you guys were talking about Zach Wheeler last show, and how different sort of that deal that he signed with the Phillies is sort of like a demarcation point in a way, because like that was data field, right? Like they just looked at data and said this is what he should be and paid him like that. This is an offseason in which the reigning Cy Young Award winner waits until March 19th or 18th to sign, and this ends up with a significantly undervalued deal. And yeah, and the Yamamoto thing, it's just sort of like an amazing contrast and a signal of just how odd this offseason actually was at the end of the day.
I will be a hipster and I'll go back to the EP and I'll say like the demarcation line for me was Rich Hill. Like Rich Hill made four starts as a 35-year-old for the Red Sox in 2015. He hadn't started a game before that since 2009, and he was hurt like the whole time. The one time he was healthy, he had a 6 ERA. Those four starts gave teams enough data, and that was the first year, I think 2015, of the StatCast era. And they're like, oh, hell yeah, this guy can pitch. Like, he could still pitch this year. Yeah, he could pitch. He was outstanding. So that was the first contract to me that's like, what? What are they looking at? Well, they're looking at the data, and it says more than the stats. And I think this is almost like the pendulum on the other end where you've got, well, okay, what does Snell not do right? He doesn't give you innings. He takes a draft pick away. At the same time, when Snell is at his worst, he's still a pretty solid pitcher. He's still a guy who gives value to your team. When he's at his best, he wins Cy Youngs. Like in the middle, you have a pitcher who's really valuable. So I like this deal. I would have liked it at like 5 years, $140 million or something. I think 2 years or 1 year with an opt-out is a steal.
It's so funny because Snell, like you guys said, even when he's not at his best, is really valuable. I think it's one of those cases where the thing that puts him on that side of the equation where he's not as good as he can be is something that's like hard to watch. Because he'll walk the ballpark.
Yeah.
Right. And it's annoying.
Yeah.
As a fan and just somebody who, you know, if you're, you know, your job is to try to evaluate ball players and pick which ones to sign, guys that walk the ballpark just piss you off. And he's one of them.
Yeah. Giants haven't had that in a while. It's like you're going back to Russ Ortiz. You're going back to Sean Estes. You're going back to Damian Moss. You know, these guys just, like drag you through the innings.
He didn't drop a Jesse Foppert reference.
Jesse Foppert is a king and a saint, and his body betrayed him.
The combination of Logan Webb and Blake Snell will be fun back to back, right? That's almost like having a normal pitcher 2 days in a row. You just kind of add them together, right? It's just like,
oh, balance.
Yeah, just like, oh, this is just, that was actually, you know, the average was something reasonable.
Yeah, that's 14 innings with the league average walk rate. What do you want?
right. Yeah. We have the Aces. The Aces list comes out tomorrow, which is Wednesday. Both Webb and Snell scored very high.
If you guys haven't read that or haven't seen that project before, it is awesome. And you can subscribe at theathletic.com to read it tomorrow. They do such a nice job getting experts in the field to be honest about this stuff. And I don't know. It's one of my favorite things that I see every preseason here.
Yeah, unfortunately, the only unanimous number one is injured. So it's kind of that sort of spring. But we'll get to that when we do the American League preview next week.
You're talking Kershaw. Oh, American League. Okay, I thought you're talking Kershaw. What's that book called again?
It's called The Last of His Kind. And it's due out May 7th from Hachette. Please pre-order.
I'm going to pre-order for our friend David in the Bay Area. His family friend loves the Dodgers.
That's nice.
Yeah, he's going to love this book. You're going to need to sign it for him, though.
Okay, so I can do that.
I'm right
I
now.
Can do that.
I'm going to wait for my galley copy.
No chance.
Cheap bastard.
No chance, Grant. We've talked a lot about the Giants. I think they're going to finish in fourth place, but they could, I guess, be in second place based on what the numbers say.
One season out of 20, they win the division. It's a beautiful dream. Come on. That's like a pitcher getting a hit right up the middle. You've seen it happen, baby.
Let's stay hot with the Giants real quick because like they are fun right now. I'm just like wincing at how badly this could look or how badly it could go if these guys, if Chapman just doesn't hit, if Snell has that season where he can't throw strikes and it's super frustrating, you know, if none of those kids emerge to fill out the rest of the rotation. Like, you know, you can go on and see different ways in which this could get bad. And as Grant, you noted yesterday, they aren't exactly acing the PR vibes test right now.
Jesus.
I mean, holy mackerel. What a piss off the Bay Area. Mess with Rennell.
Yeah. And I found out that the PA announcers make nothing. You know what I mean? Like even the top ones, we're not talking that they're a million apart. Like it's not even close. And it's just, it seems like an unforced air, and I don't know. I've got conspiracy theories that are, you know.
I never got over this, like, fact, and Andy's not going to understand this at all, but, like, you know, Rennell was on KMEL back in the day, and I never stopped seeing her as that person, you know, right?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. You know, like, she's going to go with an E40 intro and something like that. A short breakdown for people who don't know, producer Brian says, this is the Giants PA announcer. She's beloved. She is a part of, like, she's a very visible part of the PA announcer's game where she's a trailblazer. She's been around for a quarter of a century. She does TV, stuff like that. And she was let go over a contract dispute, and it's dumb as hell. And I don't think the Giants expected there to be such a backlash. I don't know. I don't think it's that important to other people, but to Giants fans, it's big, big, big deal. So PR game flunked.
Yeah. Fourth place.
Fourth place.
Dude, it could be so bad.
They could also be good. Hey, come on. Jung Lee, that guy's probably Ichiro. Probably.
Probably. Yeah. If I had to take a guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Where's 51? Sure. Like, yeah, he's probably Ichiro.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I find those projections to be interesting because I feel like Arizona had a really, really good winter, I think. They took, getting Eduardo Rodriguez provides stability to that rotation. That was something they were clearly lacking. They still have two, close to frontline starters in Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly. You can't just bank on Corbin Carroll being a 7-win player every year, right? That's crazy. But like, the ceiling is really high with him. He is a wonderful player who can do a lot of things well. They demonstrated, the young boys they've got on that roster are, really quality. Gabby Moreno was great last year. They brought back Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Jock Peterson replaces Tommy Pham. The bullpen should be fine. They have guys like Alec Thomas who could take a step forward. I mean, I look at that team, I felt like they were pretty clearly the second best, and then the Giants and the Padres have both done some work in the past week to kind of catch up. But also, like, you look at that team and you're like, well, who, it still feels, I don't know. So I don't know how much of it is just like, if that team had won 83 games last year and they hadn't played in the postseason, I would just be like, whatever, the Diamondbacks, like, so much of that is just recency bias of like spending a month around that team watching it work, essentially. You know what I mean?
But also, I mean, to their credit, right? They're exactly, and we said this last year, they make the dance and they're a giant pain in the ass because they're going to run, they're going to create trouble. They're going to, it's a dynamic, speed oriented, like they're younger, like they scare the hell out of other teams. So, it is a recency bias, but also their style of game does like look a lot better when there's pressure involved in the playoffs. And we saw that play out last year. I think when I look at them, I just think about the steps forward that could be taken by lots of dudes on the roster. And that's sort of the luxury of having young players, right? Is that there's still enough where you can dream on a couple of those guys. And yeah, 7 wins a year, right? 7 year, 7-win player every season. That's a lot to expect, but is it within the realm of possibility for a guy as talented as Corbin Carroll? It absolutely is. So I think, again, that's the luxury of youth, is that you can see, you can squint and just be like, damn, like they get a couple guys take a major step forward. Now all of a sudden they're also a really scary regular season team.
Friend of the show Brandon Fought was excellent in the postseason.
Real heads know, like real roundtable heads might remember, we were in on the Diamondbacks from the very beginning.
Sure,
we love D-backs baseball.
NLS preview last year, you go back and you'll find us talking. Hey, don't sleep on this team. And for a lot of the reasons that actually came true, where you had Corbin Carroll just become a god-tier player, and Gallen and Kelly at the top, and I feel like there were things that didn't necessarily go as right as they could have. They had a whole host of young outfielders, and you had Alec Thomas come up, and he's zipping around like a water bug, and he's great at what he does, but I think there's more offense to extract from these prospects that they have, whether it's Jake McCarthy. You've got guys who can still take that step
up. Jordan Lawler could come up.
Yeah, there's another one. And so They are a fascinating team. I think that when I say it's an amorphous blob in the middle, it's because the range is so wild for all of these teams in very different ways. And, you know, I'm not as enamored of their offseason as, you know, maybe you might be. Eduardo Rodriguez is fine, but, he kind of reminds me of Madison Bumgarner when they signed him as far as just raw career stats. Not raw career stats the season before they became a free agent.
I tell you what, buddy, they're hoping he's the exact opposite.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And so you got that. I think Suarez, he's got a ceiling, but he's also very
I forgot about
whiffy,
that. Yeah, Suarez. Yeah.
You know, and Jock Peterson, you just can't have him against lefty. I don't know. I like what they've done, but also I'm not like agog with what they've done. I think they're just a very solid team overall.
Yeah, I think that they took some obvious weaknesses and like patched them up in sort of efficient fashion in a way where it's like, okay, they clearly knew what they wanted to do and they went out and did it. And all the moves are like, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's not like they went out and got Jung-Hoo Lee, who's basically Ichiro.
Or, you know, Shohei Ohtani, for example.
Oh, right. Okay, so let's look at the Diamondbacks, right? Lineup, rotation, bullpen, defense, their org depth, which is important, right? Having enough players to get through the season. What are they bad at? Like, do you look at something where you're like, damn, that's deficient?
Potentially scoring points.
Potentially. Yeah. All right. But are they bad at it? Like, where are you coming into the season going, ooh, this is going to be a problem?
I'll tell you what they're good at is catching the ball in the outfield.
They're going to catch the ball. That's huge. Yeah. Their floor is high across the board. It's like they, you know, will you find other teams that are more standout in those areas? Of course you will. I don't think there's many where you can go across the board and be like, you know what? They do a lot of things all right. Over 162, I think that plays.
The Padres, man.
Woo!
There were times this offseason where I was reading Dennis Lynn, who does a great job covering the Padres for us. And he would be like, yeah, they've got one outfielder on the roster. And he'd just be like... All right, you know.
That's not an exaggeration. At one point, it felt like that. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I think he actually wrote that line at one point. Yeah.
And they'd be like, yeah, their starting rotation is like Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish. But AJ Preller, man, he obviously has some flaws when it comes to roster construction. But, man, that guy just does not quit. And you look up and like, I don't know, I'm not convinced that like Michael King is, you know, going to be Greg Maddux or whatever. Right, but like as a number four starter, you know, he looked pretty good down the stretch for the Yankees last year. I'm not convinced that Dylan Cease is like 80% of Blake Snell, let alone, you know, like 90 or whatever. But to get him for what they gave up for 2 years – and all of a sudden, you know, Joe Musgrove's coming off some physical issues and Darvish is coming off some physical issues. They don't have Juan Soto anymore. And yet, man, there's still a lot of talent on this club.
Are they a squints team or are they just like, I think the talent, because when you get to the bottom half of the lineup, you're really just hoping for some prospects to come through.
Do you have to squint when it's like, hey, so Manny Machado, Xander Bogaerts, and Fernando Tatis Jr. all had 900 OPSs and hit 40 home runs? You're just kind of like, yeah, no, that, you know, and that's, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I would probably bet against it for all three, but like, that's certainly within the realm of possibility for what they could do.
I think the squinting with them involves whether that crew can get through a season without tension. It just seems like there's tension all the time over there. And, you know, which makes sense. They've underachieved last year and like that's going to happen. But it's funny you mentioned what Dennis was writing in the offseason, because if you read just the clips, right, they've cut like $100 million off of payroll, right? Their owner who had like really taken pride in spending money on the team passes away. All right. They lose a bunch of players. Right. Like that's the other thing, that Seth Lugo level players like that are useful, helpful, no longer there. The fact they're still in this conversation speaks to just how talented they actually are at their core. Like you flip those baseball
the
cards around.
End, yeah.
Yeah. Like they're really, really good. I think that Cease move was awesome. You know, kind of nuts. Like when you think about the context of their offseason, like it looked like they're going backward and then you do this. But, you know, I think it just certainly makes it more fun. And I like that rotation, actually. I think it is super fascinating. I think Michael King in that spot could be something, you know. So what's it, Cease, Darvish, Musgrove, King, man, that's a top five rotation potentially, no? I mean, that's how
good. That's where you're squinting.
I'll squint there. I think that's you look at the track record. Yes, I know injuries, issues, and whatnot, but yeah, I'll squint on that rotation. The hell with it.
Just to put in perspective, they lost Blake Snell, Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, Josh Hader, Nick Martinez, Juan Soto, like in one offseason. That's a lot of guys who contributed plenty last year. And you can still look at the Padres and go, yeah, you know what? That's a perfectly fine team that should be in the conversation.
It's a real reminder of how much they biffed it last year.
Just the most confusing team I've ever. And what was their record in extra innings? Was that a thing?
Never won a game in extra inning. They lost every one-run game or something like that. You know, yeah.
Start winning those games until like July or something like that.
And some of that is bad luck.
2-12. Right? 2-12.
Some of that is bad luck, but some of that is bad process. And there was clearly like issues at the core there that I don't know if necessarily have been fixed. You know,
9-23 in one-run games. Just bananas. They shouldn't have been that bad. I'm not going to ascribe that to, like, they don't have the moxie or daring do. Like, I'm just going to say they just stepped in a pile of bad luck.
I think it's, you know, 60-40, 65-30. I don't know. It's impossible to say. I mean, I talked to enough scouts who, like, watched Padres baseball last year who had critical things to say about the way they, like, conducted at bats with runners in scoring position and all that stuff. But also, like, you know, it's – they certainly experienced some bad luck. So, like, there's no – you can't bad vibes your way into that bad of a one-run record. But you can, you know, bad vibes your way from 88 wins to 82 probably, right? That seems reasonable. I don't know.
Wouldn't they have made the run differential playoffs?
Right?
A bunch.
Like, yeah, 92 and 70 Pythag. Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
I actually didn't realize it was like a 10 games. Oh, my God.
It was, yeah. It was a weird club.
That is so weird. Like, I knew it was like a positive. I did not realize. Maybe this is just like my off-season amnesia kicking in. Did not realize it was that big a deal.
Producer Brian reminds us that they scored like 50 runs in Mexico City in two games. Yeah, that does padded a little bit, but no, they also gave up a bunch of runs in those. I don't know. They're
what's
a good
the exchange
team.
Rate of the 50 runs in Mexico City is like 25 runs here. Like what?
22-17 game in that ballpark is like a 5-4 game here. Just, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, so who's winning this division again? Which team? What's left? What's
Rockies.
The team?
Rockies are going to do it. Yeah. This is the year.
Can I just say, we did nail it with the Diamondbacks. I'm super proud of us. That almost makes up for the fact we forgot the Minnesota Twins exist.
Yeah, does it? Does it make up for it?
It almost.
Make sure we remember the Twins next week's up.
Yeah. When it's draft day. Yeah.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paulo Benquero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man of the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man of the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I wrote a long story about the Dodgers this week. They're going to be very good. They have a lot of really good players. They have the best top three in a lineup that I can remember. Maybe, I don't know, it depends kind of how you feel about some of those Astros lineups maybe, but they're going to just, you know, bludgeon a lot of teams. And that's like not even accounting for if their pitching clicks, right? Like if Tyler Glasnow actually gives them 150 innings, if, you know, Yoshinobu Yamamoto like adjusts quickly to, you know, Major League Baseball, if, you know, they can get 20 starts out of James Paxton, if Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw can come back and contribute, like this is, you know, this could be an absolute juggernaut. And even if they're not, feels like 100 wins is like, I don't want to say guaranteed, but like it would be shocking if they win less than that. They are really set up to play well this year. And yet at the same time, anything less than a title is going to be a failure for them. They have to be the only team. I mean, I guess the Braves, I guess the Astros. Does any other team play under that sort of pressure right now?
I mean, the Braves in a way, but they won a full season World Series recently. I think it's different for the Dodgers. They're tired of hearing the Mickey Mouse World Series, which, to be very clear, I think that that's stupid as hell. I think it still counts. Yeah, I get that they didn't have the wear and tear. You know, they didn't have to fight through the wear and tear that you do for a 162-game season. But it was a weird year, a weird postseason. They had an extra round that they had to go through where anything could have happened. Like, nah, it's a real World Series.
Come on. Seems silly to have gone through the risk of playing that stupid season and then pretending it doesn't count.
Yeah, no. I
you know? Like, seriously, they played the season. Yeah. Like, they had a tournament. Like, whatever. They won. It counts. But
they would shut people up.
In The Last of His Kind, a book about Clayton Kershaw, there are some people who don't agree with that sentiment. Not Kershaw. He thinks it's real. But
is that in there? Is that one of – can you do a little audio reading? Like, is there a passage?
There's a funny thing from Madison Bumgarner where I asked him if he – I don't know where I can find it. I asked Bumgarner if he was happy for Kershaw when he won, you know, just like if you felt like any sort of – you know, because Bumgarner like idolizes Kershaw. And just asked, I can't find it because the galleys don't have an index. But I was just like, so like, were you happy for him when he won the World Series? Like, oh yeah, you know, this is great, you know. And I'm also kind of glad it was in 2020 because it kind of didn't count. And I was like, whoa, all right. I may have told you this. I don't think we're doing video, so I'll have to like narrate it. But during that interview, I was talking to him about, you know, about the 2014 World Series, you know, because you can hit the bell. I covered the Royals. And I mentioned to him, I was like, yeah, you know, and like there was all, you know, there's this kind of feeling Dodgers fans always wondered, you know, like why Kershaw couldn't do like what you did, you know, like in that World Series, you know. And I was like, you know, I was there the night you threw four scoreless. And he just holds up five fingers because it was five scoreless. And he just silently just makes a five. I was like, that's actually pretty badass right
there. That's pretty good.
That's right. He's SS Sportsman of the Year and you're not.
Right. But anyway, the Dodgers feel that sort of like frustration with the lack of, you know, a championship, and that is different from the Astros and the Braves, right? But if you look at those two teams, if they don't win the World Series, they did not achieve their goals this year. And I feel like the rest of the sport has different thresholds for success, right? I mean, maybe the Phillies, I guess the Phillies are in that.
Yeah, I mean, no one really expected them to win the pennant, the year that they did, and last year they should have won it again against the lesser team.
When you've won the pennant and then you basically, you know, gagged away, for lack of an uncharitable term, another pennant, anything less than a championship, that feels like a step backwards. I think. I don't know.
One thing that as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate is the value of winning the pennant, right? You know, I feel like there's always a, hey, if you don't win at all, you're a failure. Just getting to the World Series, when you're in a city where the World Series is coming, it's buzzy. Everyone's talking about baseball. You're walking around. It's cool as hell, right? Even if you're four and out, it's cool as hell. So there's value to a pennant. But yeah, I think I'd put the Phillies up there. I think Phillies are all or nothing.
The difference with those four teams is that they've done that. They've had the buzz. They've had the, you know, the contact high of like hosting a, you know, a World Series game. Like that, you know, that feels to me to be the difference. And the Dodgers are the one at the furthest end of that extreme right now.
I think the all pressure World Series would be the Dodgers and Yankees.
We're going to talk about the Yankees next week, dude.
We will, but like, let's not forget. Like, see, you just named a bunch of clubs that, okay, first of all, I'm 100% with Grant. Like, the older I get, the more the pennants matter to me. Like, I think it is, like, the season's so long and so many weird things can happen that to fly a flag at the end of it is a big deal. Even if you don't win a World Series, it is a big deal. The Yankees have not won a pennant since 2009. They haven't even gotten there. Right. Like you just named a bunch of clubs that at least, I mean, the Dodgers, for as much rancor as there is about having not won a quote unquote real world's championship, have a ton of pennants. All right. Like they keep getting there. That is an impressive feat. Impressive. But the Yankees, like, have just been in the hinterlands for as far as that goes. And that is unprecedented in, you know, in their franchise history as we know them as the Yankees, right? Starting in the 20s, like they've never had a run this long without winning a pennant, I don't think. It's close.
81 to, I'd have to do the math, 81 to 96. It's about the same, yeah.
Yeah, all right? So that's a long, long time. Like, and even in their fallow periods, you know, the CBS reign, like didn't last long enough to get 15 years between pennants, I don't think. So, you know, anyway, it's not the longest drought. For just a pennant, it's darned close, right? And that is pressured. And so, you know, I think y'all pressure World Series, the Yankees, and yeah, the Dodgers. There's nobody facing it like them. In fact, I think it is sort of admirable in a way. They're just leaning into it. All right, you spent $1.2 billion, man. Like, yeah, they.
You kind of have to. You're like. Rejecting reality if you say anything less than like World Series or bust. You just are like, and so credit to them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's super compelling. The sport always needs a team to be that, to play that role. And the Yankees did it for so many years and the Dodgers have taken up that mantle. I think it's great. Like all eyes are on them. It's wonderful and it's going to be compelling. So I'm all in.
Can you see a worst case scenario for them? Like, is there, if you push one domino, can you knock them down? Maybe, I don't know, to where they're not World Series favorites. They might not even be favorites to get out of the National League.
I think they're better than the Braves. I don't know if they are, though. I think Atlanta's really good. So they're not that far away. I mean, they're a sprained Mookie Betts ankle, you know, from... You could argue the Braves are better. I think, though, the worst case scenario for the Dodgers is like 112 win regular season and an NLDS exit.
Oh.
Because, like, what do you do?
You're
going to fire the manager?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do?
Right.
You just have to keep, you know, it's just.
That's exactly the worst case scenario. It's not even that they somehow stink.
Yeah, it's like, oh, let's get Roky Sasaki. It's like, okay, great. You know, pencil it in for 116 wins and another potential. You just gotta win. It's hard, but it's simple, but very challenging.
Oh, my God.
I will end with this because we're out of time. My worst case scenario for the Dodgers last night was my fantasy draft, NL only. I've been with this league for 24 years, I think, by now. It's real high-stakes stuff. Mookie Betts, my first pick. He's screwed. He is screwed. He's going to hit 260. And that's why I do it. You know what I mean? Like, I had
the...
You put the evil on him.
260 is pretty good for a shortstop.
Hey, Grant, how much is the buy-in for this league?
I mean, it's not... It's not like the money that I usually spend on gambling, but it is. It's just $100. It's $100. It's not that high stakes. But I do. So one year I did win my fantasy league because I picked up Mark Melanson when he was getting saves for the Braves. Like I picked him up, and those saves were the difference between me winning and me not winning first place. And I used the winnings to buy a record player, like a very nice record player. And so every time I listen to music, I just go, my God, thank you, Mark Melanson. So that's my fantasy story. Yeah. We'll do a whole fantasy episode next week.
I hope you win this year and spend the winnings on taking us to Savannah Bananas ball game. I know Andy would love that.
Oh, Andy, you'd love it. Oh, we tease news. Shoot, we have to get to that. First off, we're going to return to an every week format. So your roundtable is back, baby. It's back every week. That's exciting. But we're going to have what's called the Roundtable Extended Universe, okay? So we've got some glue here, which is me and Andy. Mark, because he's management and he's fancy and he has to fire people and crush their dreams. He will be joining us every so often. I don't think we have like a set, like every 3 weeks or every...
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Mark has only been joining us part-time on the episodes he's on for some time. Not today. You were really locked in, so that was good. So we figured we would just actually bring in another human, not just a person checking Slack.
Yeah, so Mark has to work on his book, producer Brian says. That's a good point.
Dude, like, Brian. From the top rope he comes in here. Like, what the hell is that?
Did we, I mean, this is outstanding content that I'm not entirely sure of the answer to this. Did we firm up the rotation?
Like, we did. Yeah, we had a Slack message and everything about this earlier this week, Grant. Do you want me to just handle it?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so we're going to have a rotating group who we're going to fill in. It's going to be Katie Wu, who covers the what are they called? The St. Louis Cardinals.
Baseball. Come on,
yeah,
man.
The Cardinals for us. Fabian Ardaya, who covers the Dodgers for us. And Tim Britton, who also covers the Mets for us. And we'll also have a friend of the show, Stephen Nesbitt, occasionally part. But the idea is that it'll be Grant and I, and we'll have a third mic. It'll sometimes be Mark. It'll sometimes be the other four folks we mentioned. Freshen it up a little bit, offer a little bit of, you know, different perspective. It's not just Grant watching the Giants and, you know, me trying to sell my book. It's called The Last of His Kind. It's available for pre-order. Please buy it. But yeah, just like they're all like roundtable heads, I guess. And so they understand sort of the show, which I would love for them to explain it to me. But yeah, so it's going to be fun. We'll be around every week, and it should be a good time.
Yeah, it's a good crew. When we were asked who should join the Roundtable Extended Universe, it was people who could make us laugh. And so I think that's a good crew. Tim, Katie, Fabian, that's a crew that can make us laugh. Mark makes us laugh, but it's usually, you know, his expense. Come on, where's the book on the A's?
Look, I'll make myself laugh at your expense when I'm filling out the performance review.
This has been episode 84 of the Roundtable. We will be back next week and every week after that. Baseball season's a-coming, and we're going to talk about it, because that's what we do. We'll see you then.
I was very wrong.